The retirement and IRA show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier and Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition for this week. I want to thank everybody for joining us. On today's show, we actually have a special guest. We've had Kevin Lyles on before, so Kevin is joining us once again. Kevin is from the Rock Retirement Club, who, if you're not familiar with that, it's a subscription-based online community, I guess I could call it. Kevin can embellish if he wants to, but in that community, members come together, share ideas, bounce ideas off of each other's heads, I guess you might say. There's educational sessions and all that kind of stuff in that kind of a forum. So Kevin has done work with them for quite some time, and he's been on our show previously. And we thought we'd invite him back because he's got a couple of nice topics that he has done some, I guess, some education with members around. And they were topics that we really haven't covered per se on the show here. So we're going to talk about whether you should consider working in retirement and where you might live in retirement as some major retirement decisions. And I've got Jim in the studio here, and he'll pipe up, I'm sure, in a moment. And then I want to welcome Kevin. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you, Chris. I'm glad to join you today.
Yeah, it's nice to hear your voice again. And Jim, you are connected, correct?
I am here with the microphone on.
Wow, you've checked all the boxes. That's
I
excellent.
Did.
So did I kind of summarize the essence of the Rock Retirement Club there for those who may not be familiar with it, Kevin?
Yeah, you did a great job, Chris. It's an online community of people nearing and in retirement, trying to learn from each other.
Perfect. Perfect. So I don't know if we need to pick a particular order. Kevin, you've kind of talked about this with people before, these topics, so you can probably decide which of the two, the whether to work and the where to live, what order makes sense there. We, for our listeners, actually, this is a typical retirement and IRA show, not a lot of prep, so we're always unscripted here. Jim and I plan to just listen to what Kevin talks about and ask questions as if we were retirees. I promise everyone I will try to not let Jim monopolize Kevin in his conversation when it comes to where to live, because you all know there's this ongoing debate about where Jim is going to retire himself as far as where to live.
If I want to ask Kevin about the fine state of Kentucky,
you can certainly ask. We don't want it to be a personal therapy session that just turns into a podcast. So, yeah. So
we'll get Jim headed in the right direction.
Okay, perfect, perfect. So, Kevin, where would you like to start?
Well, let's start with deciding whether or not to work in retirement. And okay. I guess I have to start by saying a lot of people say, well, I thought retirement was being free of work. And that's not necessarily the case, and it shouldn't be. You know, historically, that was the case. People retired, they sat down on the porch and had memories and waited to die. But today, people are living so much longer that a lot of people, and in fact, most retirees do work in some form in retirement. And I refer to these two decisions as to whether you'll work and where you'll live as the two biggest decisions that a retiree has to make outside of the financial world. And they have big implications, both financially and as well as the non-financial side of retirement, which is what I focus on as a certified retirement coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so obviously there's going to be a group of people who, to make their, quote, retirement work, need some income from work. I think there's a lot of people, though, that find the idea of an old-fashioned retirement without work kind of boring. Whether they need the money or not, they find themselves doing something. And I joke with people all the time that whatever work you choose to do in, quote, retirement, as long as you have put yourself in a financial position where you could do an old-fashioned retirement, now any job you pick is going to be more enjoyable because you don't have to do it. You're simply doing it by choice, which really opens up the world for you to do what you maybe have always dreamed about or do it in a way that you've always dreamed about because you're not being forced to do it a particular way to put food on the table.
That's exactly where I start with people, Chris, and that is figure out if you need money. If you do need money, then that will limit the types of jobs you can look at because you'll have an amount that you need. But if you don't need money, then work in retirement can truly be limited to dream jobs. And, you know, when we talk about leaving your career, I talk about five functions of work: financial stability, time management, a sense of utility or accomplishment, socialization, and status or significance. Every retiree needs to replace those five things somehow in retirement. And for many retirees, work is a good way to get at that. You just don't work as much or as hard, and you certainly don't work in a job that you don't enjoy if you have the money to do that.
Do you, and Jim, obviously, maybe Jim's saving up all his words for the, when we get to the, where you're going to live in retirement.
Perhaps but, I am. But, I'm biding my time.
Okay. You know, a lot of people face, and I totally agree with you, those fulfillment, those categories you just listed to create a sense of fulfillment overall in retirement, certainly important. How easy is it for people in retirement to actually find jobs that fulfill them? You know, we hear about ageism and that sort of thing. Is this something that's practical, that people actually can go do those things that they wish they could always do?
Yeah, there's certainly still some of that out there. Frankly, the last year and a half, I think, has helped a lot because a lot of alternative working arrangements have been figured out. And so employers now know they can have their workforce working at home, part-time. And so those kinds of things, I think, are really opening up in a lot of companies now. And a lot of companies really like the experience that older workers can bring to their workforce. So I actually think it's changed. I think you were exactly right 5 years ago, Chris. And I think we've seen a big change now that it's easier to find jobs. And frankly, a lot of retirees sort of make their own positions, especially when money isn't your number one driver. You can either work as a consultant or as an independent contractor. Starting your own business is very popular with retirees. So there are a lot of ways to do it. The key is to figure out what will really excite you, what will make you want to get up in the morning and go to work. And take on that kind of job. And so I see a lot of people who will try to work in the field of their favorite hobby in retirement. Or maybe it is something they put away as a young person because it wasn't practical. You know, maybe you wanted to be an artist and you didn't want to be a starving artist for your whole career. But now that you're retired and have some money put away, maybe you're going to enter art professionally. So we see a lot of that with retirees.
Yeah, you have a really good point about kind of creating your own position by starting a business. I have noticed a fair number, I wouldn't say the majority, but a fair number of people that we deal with here that make mention of starting some type of business. And since they generally, people we're working with have saved for retirement, have accumulated enough where they actually can retire, they can do it without that normal angst that you'd have as a 25 or 30 year old when your idea, your small business has to work in order to sustain you. That's a lot of pressure. And without that, I think creating your own job, if you can't find somebody to hire you, is an excellent approach.
Oh, and starting your own business really checks all of the boxes that retirement coaches talk about to have a successful retirement. It gives you a purpose to your life. Purpose and meaning are very important. Gives you some time management. Your goals, it gives you goals and ambition. Physical and mental stimulation, depending on what kind of a business it is, can be really important. A sense of utility and status. And then a lot of people talk about wanting to leave a legacy for their family other than just an IRA account. And being able to pass a business down to your children or grandchildren is very appealing to a lot of retirees.
That's also a great idea. I've run into a couple people who have done that specifically. They've started a business, not even just for themselves, but with one of their kids. And the few that I've talked to that have done that have described it as being very rewarding because it's a way of them handing down this kind of family legacy, if you will, in a little less traditional manner, but something that you could build and could last for generations depending on the business. But yeah, that's also a great idea.
Both of our kids are actively pursuing their careers, but it's sort of one of my bucket list items to do that is to at some point start a business with the kids that they can then carry on. So if I can get either of them interested, I'm going to be all in on that one.
As I listen to you two talk, did you notice, I wasn't talking?
And did you find it very uncomfortable?
It was. No. I'm just thinking the way my brain works is more of the planning strategies from a financial planner standpoint. It's just the way I am. So as I hear you talking about the pros of working and then starting your own business, there's just a few thoughts that run through my mind. The first would be, and I think you would agree, Chris, from a financial planning standpoint, and several studies came out over the past 3 or 4 years. They got a lot of press when they first came out. I'm not sure if Blanchett from Morningstar came out with one of them. I know one of them came out from that the Boston College Center for Retirement Planning or something like that. Chris, I forget what the name of that place is. But what they were trying to get people to understand is there is no investment you could purchase. There's no annuity you could purchase. There's pretty much nothing you could do with your money that would provide as big a bang to improving your retirement than actually continuing to work in retirement. And even just generating a little extra money. $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year more of income, Kevin, as you said, but doing things you love. You may not be at the office and the grind you used to do. You may be out doing something you just totally enjoy. But that extra money, and I think, Chris, you could address this better since you do the planning in the office. You probably know just a lot of times we run into those clients, Chris, whose minimum dignity floor is well taken care of. But as soon as they start putting those fun spending in, it blows up. And they run into situations or problems. And there's nothing better they could do than to get additional sources of income. If you don't have the assets, listeners, to turn into an annuity stream of income or even a withdrawal stream of income, what better thing to do than to trade a little bit of your time for some cash flow? Can either of you, I mean, do you agree with that concept? Do you agree with my mind is going? Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I certainly do, Jim. And I want to go back to the starting a business point in a minute, but let me just jump on this point because it's so important. And it's you may have enough to retire, but do you have enough to just be thrilled with retirement? And so if an extra $25,000 a year during your go-go years would allow you to take a couple extra hunting trips a year, maybe a trip to Europe, maybe take the whole family somewhere, you know, just think of how much that can enhance your retirement life And you don't have to get risky with your investments. It's just extra money that you've dedicated to a particular purpose. That's a great way to work, and a great reason to work in retirement, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see a lot of people that are that do that. Because they recognize they just can't. They're the type of people who can't not work. But they do it. They structure in a way where they can still have what we generally call or refer to as the go-go period, a very active retirement lifestyle. But then work periodically, maybe for 3 months out of the year, if they're lucky enough to find something they can do over that short period, or at least something that gives them the flexibility to take off time to then go spend the money that they just earned on the things like you mentioned, Kevin. So that is, I think that's becoming a pretty popular approach to those. There's obviously the group that are going to work one way or another, but for those who see what Jim described, which is they're in pretty good shape, but they could go from decent retirement to that really fulfilling retirement using the technique like you guys are talking about, with a little bit of part-time work in some way, whether it's self-employment or working for someone else.
Yeah, there have been a lot of surveys among retirees who are working as to why. And obviously the number one reason is I need the money, and that's always going to be there. Some people work before they're 65 because they need medical benefits, mm-hmm. and they need something to tide them over till they get to Medicare. But then it's things like improving my physical health, my emotional well-being, stay involved with people. You get all of those benefits plus the money. What could be better than that? Mm-hmm. And then Jim mentioned when he was talking about the study of people starting a business, you know, I've talked about the positive sides, but I always counsel retirees who are thinking about doing it to at least look at the other side of the picture. And number one is, you don't want to put your financial stability at risk. You know, you've saved up all this money, mm-hmm. probably in tax-deferred accounts. Don't blow it all on buying some new business. You know, in other words, start a new business that you can do it without jeopardizing your financial security.
Yeah, for sure. I'd describe that as, you know, fumbling on the 1 yard line kind of an idea, that you want to do everything possible not to do that. For sure. So you've got to be careful and extra careful, because the things that Jim and I talk about, as you age, you tend to overestimate your mental acuity when it comes to financial analysis in particular. And yet those skills may have declined. So this is where people can, maybe not so much if they're early retirees in their late 50s or early 60s, but if you're thinking about doing these types of things deeper into your 70s or something, I would be extra cautious for exactly what the reasons that Kevin, you mentioned. You don't want to put yourself in a position to accidentally or overlook something or take on risk that you're not fully aware of or fully protected against. And just, you know, be aware of that mental acuity issue is related to this topic.
Yeah, that's good advice. Fortunately, you know, doing something like starting a business will help ward off some mm-hmm. of that cognitive decline.
Absolutely.
In other words, using your brain mm-hmm. is the best way to keep it healthy. But no, you're exactly right. And, you know, we know most new businesses fail. That's never going to change. Mm-hmm. They are risky propositions. So I just say, when you're choosing what kind of business you want to start, choose one you can start with little capital, and all you're risking is your sweat equity.
Yes.
The second big risk, though, is don't put your marriage at risk. Mm-hmm. In other words, make sure you and your spouse have the same goals and the same idea of a good retirement life. You know, if your spouse is ready to take off and travel and see the world, you better not be stuck at your new business every day. Mm-hmm. And that's something that a lot of couples don't talk about. They don't talk about what the ideal retirement life is. So you've got to get together with your spouse or your life partner and figure that part out if you're going to start a new business, because it will take up a lot of your time. And that's the third caution I give people, which is have a clear picture of what you want to achieve with your business. In other words, I heard of a guy who loved to be outside and in plants, you know, gardening and cutting grass. And so he started a lawn care business, but it grew so fast, he was stuck back at the office, you know, sending out bills and scheduling appointments. He never got outside anymore. So if your goal in this business is to garden, make sure you don't grow it so big that you're no longer gardening. And then don't let your business become stressful or crowd out other important areas of your life. We all have that problem at some points during our career when we focus too much on our work and not enough on our family and our other goals. Well, in retirement, you have the freedom to cut back and make sure you know how to say no when you're doing that. You don't want it to become stressful. That's the reason, presumably one of the reasons you left your career. So that's, and then finally, it's don't underestimate the level of time and commitment that new businesses take. A lot of people go in and think, I'm just going to work on this 2 hours a day. And very few small businesses will allow that.
Yeah, those are all great points, Kevin. Thank you.
If I could add just one thing before we move on to the next topic, moving to Kentucky. When it comes to a business in retirement, and again, this just is the way I think of things. Keep one thing in mind, folks. It could be a very good financial planning strategy on top of that due to something called the still working exception. I just want to throw this out there. If you start a business after what is known as your required beginning date, which is April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72, and the business is started after that date, even if you own 100% of it, you don't own 100% of it as far as the still working exception, which says if you are working for a company that has a 401k and you do not own more than 5% of the business, you do not have to take required minimum distributions from that 401k. But they actually measure, we've spoken about this in the past, Chris, they actually measure it. Now, I was always under the impression, Chris, it's your required beginning date, April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72. But during the last Ed Slott presentation when we were reviewing this, one of the consultants mentioned through the year you turn 72. I was always under the impression it had to be after April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72. But if you start the business after that period, folks, and you have a 401k in it, you could actually move your IRAs into that 401k and postpone required minimum distributions. Because the law is literally written that they check the 5% ownership on that day and on that day only. And Ed has used that and pointed that out to us repeatedly. Now, one, if you ever did a strategy like that, first of all, get really good tax advice and work with someone who knows what they're talking about so you don't make a mistake. But it actually has to be a legit 401k and you have to have a legit business. In other words, if you are just going to open a business after that age, create a 401k, move your IRAs into it and say, I'm still working, but you gross nothing 1 year or 10 bucks and you don't really do anything, the IRS will rip that apart if you're ever audited. But if you actually do have a business, which is what Kevin is saying to do, and you actually contribute to your 401k at that business, even if it's a solo 401k at that business, you are contributing part of your salary into it. You are legitimately running a business with a retirement plan. You do not have to take required minimum distributions. And the strategy could be, you could see a situation, Kevin and Chris, what if someone has several million dollars in an IRA and the RMDs are absolutely killing them? It's pushing them into higher brackets and they're thinking, how the hell can I get these RMDs down? If I only had half this amount of money in my IRA instead of 3 million, if I only had a million and a half, my RMDs would put me, you know, two tax brackets down. Well, you could do a strategy like that and move half the IRA into the 401k, and now your RMDs are cut in half. You might be saying, well, I'm just going to create a problem in the future when I retire. Yes, you will, but what if you're self-employed for a very, very, very long time, right up to the time you die, if possible? And then you could leave that 401k to, say, a donor-advised fund or a charitable remainder trust without any tax issues. Mm-hmm. So anyways, that was just going through my head when you were mentioning that, Kevin, that if people mm-hmm. are going to start a business, now if you're 60 and you're going to start a business, you're not going to wait 12 years to do it.
Right.
But if you retire at 68, 69, 70 and do a sound retirement plan with a forward-looking tax projection analysis, and if you start seeing, God, my RMDs are going to be substantial, you might want to hold off starting that business until after. And again, I was always under the impression until after your required beginning date, but recently it was presented till after the year you first become eligible for RMDs. I would have to get some clarification from Ed on that. It's either going to be after age 72 or after April 1st of the year following the year you turn 72. Right. If you start the business after that time, folks, and you have a legit 401k, you can move your IRA into it and postpone RMDs.
That's a good point. We haven't talked about that for quite a while, but since we are talking about starting a business in retirement, that is one of those kind of side effects.
Exactly.
I would always make sure to consider it as such. I'm always nervous when we talk about something like this that we're going to get people so excited about, oh my gosh, here's a interesting way to maybe postpone RMDs well beyond 72. And they get so excited about it, they forget that that's not the driving force, hopefully. That's not the reason to go start this business. It's make sure that you want to start it in the first place. And then this becomes a possible side benefit to it. Don't let the tax tail wag the dog, is what I always say.
Right, and that's what I was trying to relay. If you're thinking of starting a business, you might want to try to figure out at what point do I start it. And if it's not important to delay RMDs, I mean, if you're starting a business because you absolutely need the money and you need to take RMDs, it doesn't matter.
Right.
But if you're starting a business because you want to help your children or grandchildren, or you want to give some of the reasons that Kevin listed, and you want to feel like you're participating in society again, and you do have meaningfully large IRAs, you might want to say, well, wait a minute, I'm going to start it after age 72 or mm-hmm. after April 1st of the year following the year 72. I'll get some clarification, folks, on that. It threw me for a loop when they said that, Chris, and I because it wasn't in person, it's online, it's hard to ask a question, because mm-hmm. if it was in person, my hand would have went up right away.
Right.
But anyways, Kevin, I'm not trying to rob your thunder, so sorry.
I love that those thoughts, Jim. And in fact, I was as you were going through that, I was thinking, well, what else does it make possible? You know, one thing, a couple other ideas for if you start a business. One, some of your quote living expenses may be legitimate business expenses. Things like if you're traveling to do this business, some of your travel expenses may be picked up. The other options I can think of is perhaps you can put your kids or more likely your grandkids on the payroll, get them started young with the Roth savings very early in life. What a great step ahead that would be. If you keep a high deductible health plan while you're in this business, you know, before Medicare age, then you can keep contributing to the HSA. So that you're right. You ought to look at all the financial possibilities that a business makes possible.
Okay.
Good stuff.
Hey, before we leave the weather to work, I just wanted to touch on, we've touched on a couple of the options for working in retirement, but I just wanted to sort of go over the list just to open people's minds to thinking about the possibilities. So if you need the money, if you're really short, you had some financial situation, you haven't saved enough, then full-time work in the same field that you left behind is probably your best way to go, because you've got experience there and it's probably going to pay you the most. But if you don't need that money, but you still want a job, and whether it's full-time or part-time, then I strongly encourage people to think about working in another field that will add newness to your retirement. But then obviously part-time work is what most people do in retirement because they're retired. They want to relax a little bit. Self-employment of some kind, a consultant, and then there's volunteer work. And you say, well, why would I do that? Well, volunteer work really pays you back, even if it doesn't pay you dollars. It gives you a lot of sense of contribution that you're making to society. So volunteer work, or maybe it's just a mix of volunteer and paid work. You know, a lot of good charitable organizations can't pay you much because they're trying to watch their dollars and support their whatever their particular mission is. So maybe you agree to a real low pay rate, but you get paid something for your volunteer work. So those are just some options in addition to starting a business or just continuing to work in the same field that I think retirees ought to think about.
Perfect. Let's move on to Kentucky.
Well, this one is, frankly, it's just as important as whether you work. And a lot of people don't even make a decision. And that's where, as a coach, I try to get every retiree at least know you have the freedom to change where you live and be thoughtful about it and be purposeful about it. You know, the reason it's so important is, much like our careers gives us a sense of identity, where we live often gives us a sense of identity. You know, if you're a New Yorker, or Jim, you're from Boston, right?
You south know, of the city, the, but yes, Massachusetts.
That gives you an identity when you say that. And people think things about you, whether they're true or not, but it's part of your identity. So at least think about what a move can do. And obviously the first thing it can do is it can substantially change the financial picture. You know, if you're in a very high cost of living, high tax area, and you may be underfunded for retirement, but a move to a lower cost, low tax or no tax state might make you overfunded in a hurry, and it can completely change your retirement. But it's not just about money. It's also about your social network, the activities you can do. You know, you guys are out there in Colorado. I'm in Ohio and Florida. If I want to ski, I have to travel. You can go ski every weekend. Well, if you're a big skier and you love that throughout your life and you vacation every year at ski resorts, well, maybe you ought to think of moving to a ski area for part of your retirement, at least your early retirement years. So that's why I tell people at least recognize a move is possible. Most people don't move. Most retirees stay in the same home they're in, and that's fine. And I don't encourage anyone to move. I just encourage people to think about it.
Well, I would agree there. Because, again, I've said repeatedly my thoughts of moving folks, and I share openly on the show what I'm thinking of doing and my health and all of that so people can learn from it. But, Chris, you know this. One of my thoughts of moving isn't because the 50-something-year-old Jim hates Colorado. I love it here. I may complain about how hot and dry it is and how hard the clay soil is, but for a guy who loves to hunt and fish and hike, it's a beautiful place to be. I love it. But when I'm in my 70s and 80s, I'm not going to be doing a lot of those. I'm just going to be slowing down. And the older me, Kevin, is going to be saying, wow, I can't go out and do that anymore. I wish I could garden, which is my other passion, longtime listeners will know. And gardening in Colorado is not nearly as easy as it would be in other parts of the country. I am contemplating moving, Kevin, because of the older me. I feel the younger me owes it to the older me to at least evaluate the option of moving. Because the older me, the 70, 80-year-old me, he's going to be the one who likes to garden.
Yeah, that's I love that, Jim. And, you know, you have the advantage as a retirement planner working with people, and you see how this comes up, don't you? Joseph Coughlin, who is the author of The Longevity Economy, which is a great book, but he's the founder of MIT's Age Lab. He suggests answering these three questions to help you with your housing decisions. Who will change my light bulbs? How will I get an ice cream cone? And whom will I have lunch with? And that's getting at some of those issues mm-hmm. that you talked about, which is how easy is this going to be to live here when I'm older? And look, let's face it, the costs of moving, both financially and emotionally, are huge. And so you don't want to move every 3 years in retirement. You need to think about your older self. Now, I don't think you have to make, when you retire, I don't think you have to make a forever decision. I think it's entirely reasonable to think about the go-go years, right? The next 10 years, just think a decade ahead and think, what do I want to do over the next decade of my life? And where can I live that will make that the easiest?
Yeah, and I think you might be able to ease into it in a way as well, which is maybe long-term rental in this other place or you know, if you could afford it, two full homes in both places could be a way to kind of straddle, and knowing that eventually you're going to permanently move to that second home, but you can kind of get your feet wet, if you will, and get that transition started. So it's not a, well, I'm going to live 10 years and do this, and then on year 10 year and one day I'm heading on out and now I'm in the second phase. It's most of the time a transition is the most realistic.
Yeah. And, you know, I always encourage people, especially if they're really relocating far away, renting might not be a bad idea for a year or two,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of those high transaction costs that we talked about. The rental market, you can rent nice homes in almost any area you want and all different types of living arrangements now. So give that a thought. If you haven't been to an area and experienced four seasons there, and it's, you know, here's an example. So we have a second home and it became our primary home in Florida, and it's sort of a resort destination area. It's a barrier island that we're on. And during my career, we always came here during spring break. Well, guess what? It's a real popular area. Well, what happens when all the spring breakers go home? It has a very different feel. Now, we happen to like that feel, but someone who had just come here during the high season and saw the crowds and all the people and loved that might not like it the other months of the year. So try it, try an area out and make sure you've tried it out for all the different seasons.
I would agree with that. Even in my case, what I'm thinking of doing is renting. I think everyone should rent. You shouldn't just up and pack and move cross country because you went somewhere on vacation and you enjoyed being there 2 weeks out of the year skiing or 2 weeks out of the year fishing or whatever it is you were traveling to these parts, and you just fall in love with it and you think, I want to live there. There's a lot different, folks, living in a place as a tourist and living in a place as a resident. So you have to experience what it's like to be a resident. So I have every intention, again, for the older me. I owe it to the older me. I may absolutely hate it, but I owe it to the older me to try it. But I have every intention of renting a place for several years and living out there and maintaining my Colorado place and coming back and forth because I don't want to leave Colorado yet. But you have to, I firmly believe, Kevin, live somewhere for a few years. The worst case is you go out there, you sign a 2-year lease, you have a nice place, you get out there 6, 8, 10 months into it, you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. It's not anything what I thought. Well, okay, next year I'll move back when my lease is over, or I'll break my lease and go, as opposed to buying a house, moving everything out there, and then a year or two into it finding you don't like it. I really think people should rent. There's absolutely nothing wrong with renting for a period of time as you decide, even where you want to live in that location. You might find one neighborhood and buy a house there, and a couple years later you realize, wow, I actually like the neighborhood over the hill better. So that would be my thoughts, and I have no intention of just upping and moving. I have every intention of renting a place.
Yeah, and you know, when you rent, you also free yourself to try out a lot of different things. And why not do that? Retirement seems to be a great phase of life to do that. So some people want to try out international living for a year or two. So you go rent in another country and live there. Some people like RV living and they buy an RV. And I know people who have sold their home and most of their possessions and then decided they didn't like it out on the road. Whereas I know other folks who kept all their possessions and kept their home and went out on the road and loved it. Maybe it's because they knew they had a place to go back to. But there, you know, if you've never lived in a big city and you want to go try that for a year, why not do it? If you rent, you have that freedom. Whereas if you start buying, you're quickly going to not be able to keep trying different things.
But not only that, you could rent a place, say, for 2 years and then rent your place out for 2 years.
Absolutely.
And if your house is paid for, the rent will help support the maintenance upkeep and help offset some of the rent you're paying at the new place.
Yeah, we talked about having second homes, and it's a wonderful luxury, and it comes with a lot of positives, but also some negatives. And I just, you know, people need to have their eyes open. But the best thing in my mind about having a second home in retirement is to expand your lifestyle. In other words, you go somewhere with a different climate, with different activities that really expands your life. And that's the best thing about retirement, is being able to do that. For a lot of us, avoiding harsh weather is a reason to have a second home somewhere. You get new friends and neighbors. You know, we have very good friends at both of the locations where we have homes. It's a great meeting place for your family and your friends to get together, especially if you're in, you know, a great climate and you came from somewhere that's maybe not such a great climate.
See that, it's Chris? Wait a minute. I was going to say, Chris, you could visit me in Kentucky in July.
I could. I can predict the chances of that happening right now.
Listen to what Kevin said. It's a wonderful place for people to come visit to get a change of weather.
Yeah, I could. Yeah, no.
No?
Oh, no.
I tried, Kevin.
No.
I have to be careful how I say this in case my wife listens to this one. But, you know, if you're a couple that's had two really active careers, and so you've had largely independent lives in those careers, retirement can be a lot. That's a lot of togetherness 24/7. And so having a second home allows you to be apart a little bit, you know, and that's not a bad thing to have that in retirement. And in our case, you know, we'll each have friends to one of our houses while the other is away, and vice versa. So that's a good thing to, but then let's talk about some of the downsides, or at least the considerations you need to have about having a second home. One, significantly increases your fixed and variable expenses if you buy a second home. And so you just got to make sure you don't squeeze that retirement budget too much. So make sure you've got the money to do it comfortably, or don't do it. If you don't have that money, then rent, you know, or stay in an extended stay place or something like that. But if you're going to buy a second home, then make sure you've got enough money to do it, or you're jeopardizing your own financial stability and you won't sleep well at night. Two, it doubles your home maintenance obligations. And I say that as someone who can fix nothing myself, but just arranging for people to do things and getting them in the house and doing the contracts, that's a lot of work, and you're doubling that. So think about that. If you're someone who likes Medicare Advantage and you love the cost structure of Medicare Advantage versus traditional Medicare, it's going to be a lot harder to do that if your second home is in another location. So it makes that a lot less attractive. It complicates your life because you need two of everything. So you're going to have a lot more stuff.
Two
if
wives?
You have a second home.
What? You need to work on one first, Jim.
I was going to say, would I have to get two wives?
Baby steps,
well,
Jim.
We want you to get the first one
right,
first.
Exactly.
And we'll work on the second.
Well, I have no luck getting the first, so maybe I should just skip and go straight to the second.
That's a good approach. I mean, so far, what you've tried hasn't worked out.
It's been
so
miserable
well,
trying to get the first one, yeah. So I might as well skip the first one and just go to wife number two.
Yeah. Remember, we used to do that on the radio show. Remember, no one ever wanted to call in first,
right,
and be,
yep,
first. So we'd say, okay, we're just going to skip the first caller. We're asking now for the second caller. So you don't have to be the first one. We'll just skip right to the second one. So that same idea might work with wives,
I guess. It may.
And all kidding aside, it's not just that you need two of everything. You need two barbers, you need two dentists, you need two doctors, you need two churches, you need, so it really does add to your expenses and just the complications of life. Another one I found, which actually surprised me when we changed our domicile to Florida, was it's harder to be involved in the community in both places because you're not there all the time. And so that's something to think about. If that's really important to you, then maybe a second home isn't the best answer for you. It also can limit your employment opportunities. In other words, I would have trouble with even a part-time job that required me to be somewhere at certain hours because I'm gone half the year. So those things are considerations I think everyone needs to make before they do it. Having said that, it's a wonderful way to add to your retirement life. And in the genre of what does this make possible, it does allow you to change tax domiciles. And so you can go from a high tax state to a low or a no tax state, potentially. You can, as Jim mentioned earlier, you can rent one of your homes or both of them when you're not there and offset some of those costs that we talked about. So there are a lot of things it makes possible with a second home that I think are really good, but you just got to know what you can afford and go into it. And then some of the financial considerations you ought to think about. Are you going to pay cash or are you going to carry a mortgage on that second home? You know, I always tell retirees, be careful not to spend all of your after-tax dollars, because if you do that, then you're not going to have any discretion in controlling your income later to avoid IRMA surcharges or other tax increases. Just a small tip, and I think it's getting better, but it is harder to get a mortgage when you're retired. Yes, you can do it. There are lenders who specialize in asset-based loans as opposed to income-based loans, which is the traditional mortgage. But it's if you really know you want to do this, I would get it done while you're still working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not impossible, but it certainly does add to the challenge if you're going to attempt a mortgage after the fact, after the retirement trigger has been pulled, for sure. So that's a good idea to, if you're considering it for your go-go years in particular, maybe get some things situated prior to the retirement decision itself. It's a good idea. The kind of working in retirement with the homes, I've also seen quite a number of people that you mentioned the challenges of having a part-time job, but splitting between two homes. I've run into several people that actually it works the other way. It's perfect because the home that they go to when it's nice, there's additional seasonal work in that area during the time when that particular geographic location is an attractive place to be. So they, you know, maybe a golf, a marshal. I've seen several people actually that drive around on the golf cart, just make sure everything's going well on the golf course. And if it's in a northern climate, there's no golf in the winter. So when they're down south in the wintertime, they're not needed and maybe they have an opportunity down there. But when they move back north to enjoy the better weather, that actually opens up some of this hospitality work that happens in the area, and it's like a perfect situation. It's symbiotic. There's a job waiting for them when they decide that they want to move back there because the weather's turned.
Yeah, we had one of our club members do that with golf, and he got to play free, you know, when he wasn't working. So it was a real win-win for
mm-hmm.
him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's lots of those types of opportunities if you investigate a little. Well, any other moving related questions, Jim, that you have for Kevin while we've got him on?
Not that I have off the top of my head. I may pick your brain a little bit about the Ohio River Valley since you grew up there, but we'll do that off the radio show so I don't bore people.
It is wonderful country, Jim.
Did you hear that, Chris?
It is. I feel claustrophobic there, personally. So there's the, not to bring up another people are going to think I hate that area. It's nothing personal against the area. Just I'm expressing how I feel, and everyone has a right to feel the way they want, right? That's what I'm constantly told. So I feel claustrophobic there.
Because of all the trees?
Yeah, because here, growing up out west, I can see the storm coming hours ahead of time. I can always see the horizon. I always know what direction's north, south, east, or west, because you can see big landmarks here, like the mountains, which are always to the west of where we live. So that is just my normal. Out there, I would get turned around. I had no idea what direction we're going. You're cresting a hill. You're thinking you're going to get a view, and then there's just more trees. It's just more. It's like it never stops. And I literally had the feeling of being claustrophobic and really sweaty because of the humidity. So
you and that humidity.
I had a bad time. I just did overall, and I forgot about the trees until you brought it up. But yeah, claustrophobic for me.
Well, I will be out there, hopefully, if everything comes to fruition, around the second week of July till around the third week of July, which I think is the coolest time of summer.
Well, I can't wait to hear how that goes.
Maybe yeah, I want to hear that report. I've never heard that described as the coolest part. But.
Well, I will be driving. I have decided to do that because I was shocked at how much it costs to rent a car out there. And that's going to allow me to bring the recording equipment. So as long as I can find an Airbnb with AC, I will be able to set everything up, Chris, and give you a live update of how
the humidity
is. I
think it would be
a
better show if you were sitting there without AC, and we'll record at about 3:30 in the afternoon, and we'll just get a play-by-play of how it's going.
How I'm feeling?
How you're feeling at that moment. You could have that fan blowing on you. Anyway, well, thank you very much, Kevin,
Chris,
for joining
us.
Go ahead.
I'm with Jim on this. When he's going to do a 2-year lease, I'm all for it.
Okay.
Thank you, Kevin.
Well, I hope he might like it. I mean, there's people who live there and love it. So it's an area that can be loved. I would fully admit that, right? Different strokes for different folks.
I will say, you know, I belong to that, I don't know, it's a website called Meetup, M-E-E-T-U-P, meetup.com. And I run some social groups out here in Colorado, a hiking group and a happy hour group. But you join and people will have groups, Kevin, and there's just hundreds upon hundreds of different types of groups for every type of passion and hobby people have. So I've been looking at some of the Meetup ones. Now, with COVID, not much has been happening. So I've been going back previous years, Chris, and just looking at some of the events. And a lot of people will post photos of the events. Mm. So I've been looking at the July and August photos of a lot of the social and hiking groups. Mm-hmm. I will tell you, Chris, they look happy. They're all outside.
That's at the beginning of the hike.
They look happy. Even the social ones, they sit outside on patios. Now, the only thing I did notice, they glisten in the photos.
Yeah, there you go. Glisten. That's a good word for it.
So I believe that is to what you are referencing.
Yes, the glistening. Exactly.
So they're smiling and happy. They're just glistening.
Well, thanks so much, Kevin, for joining us. Any passing thoughts before we let you get back to your day?
Just for every retiree to realize they've got these two big decisions to make, and if they think about it and make a decision, they can't go wrong.
Perfect.
Thanks, Kevin. We loved having you on.
Yep.
Enjoyed it.
Thanks a lot. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you want to learn a little bit more about us or put in a request for a future EDU show topic, just go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. On there, you can reach out to us through the contact form, or you can learn a little bit more about us.
And if I could, Kevin, before you go, if you want to tell people how to join your Rock Retirement Group or check it out, feel free to explain to our listeners.
Oh, sure. It's just check out rockretirementclub.com, and you'll find out all about it.
Perfect. Yeah, easy to remember, rockretirementclub.com. It's pretty big. Right? Can you give us an idea of membership size?
Yeah, we're over 500 members spread throughout the country and in a couple of international destinations as well.
Nice. I know it's a real active club because I run into people who have make mention of hearing, reading, talking some topic on the club forums themselves. So,
how did you guys come up with the name Rock?
Well, the founder of the club is Roger Whitney, who has a podcast, The Retirement Answer Man, and he wrote a book called Rock Retirement.
Oh, okay. Like Bedrock, but just Rock?
No, I think it's
no,
like...
No, Rock is in... like rock and roll. I don't even know how to say
it. Yeah.
Enjoy your retirement. Yeah. Rock your retirement.
Oh, rock. Okay. Well, I'm thinking of rock, like a big boulder or something like that. Okay, I get it. Rock your retirement in the
rock and roll sense.
Rock and roll, right. Yeah. Okay, now I get okay, never mind.
No, it's all good. Well, thanks a lot, Kevin. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Salmier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, HELPS.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salmier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.